A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace, and this is another Superman Sunday episode, and I have Adam from Talking Superman joining me again. Thanks for joining, Adam.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So today we're going to be talking about Superman number 3, continuing our look at the Brian Bendis run of Superman. I'm not sure how long we're going to keep doing the Bendis run. You know, I felt it was very important to do it because it was such a different direction. And I've actually been going back and reading some old John Byrne era stuff as well. And you listeners will know that we had a episode recently about the Triangle era. So I've been kind of playing in that space of mid-80s Superman. And what's interesting is I didn't realize just how many parallels there were. Like, obviously, we talked about the Man of Steel, the original six-issue John Byrne series. We talked about the Bendis series. There's obvious parallels there. They even used the same font, six issues. I think the Byrne one was biweekly, so it came out every other week. Bendis was weekly. The stories were, you know, completely different. Byrne was very much an origin story. Bendis was more, let me show the status quo of Superman, what it looks like to me. But another thing that I noticed is when they relaunched Superman with Byrne, it was with a new issue of the Superman title, number one, and Action continued its old school numbering. And I'd forgotten that, because they did the same thing for Bendis, right? Action continued. They had Action 1000, and then Bendis's continued with 1001, but Superman started over with a new number one. Now, I think the reason I didn't notice it is because they do relaunches and new number ones all the time now. Back when Byrne did it, it was a bigger deal, but it's still another parallel. And I found that really interesting. So yeah, like I said, I don't know how long we'll continue to do these. I think there's worth in talking about Superman, of course, and we'll keep doing Superman Sundays for sure. But how much we'll focus on Bendis, how much we may go back and do some other classic stuff, it's up in the air right now. So I say all that to say this: if you have a preference, listeners, let me know. Shoot me an email, hit me up on social media, and let me know if you for sure want us to keep continuing. I know Superman Sundays is the favorite of some of you out there, particularly John Paul, who I met at Long Beach Comic Con last weekend. Oh man, Superman Sundays, they're the best. And I've heard that from other listeners on social media as well. So if you have a preference, let me know. I'm going to keep reading the Bendis Superman. I have no plans of dropping it anytime soon. So, you know, I'm happy to keep talking about it. But I also do want to talk about some of that more classic stuff as well. So what's your preference, Adam? Let me ask you that.
I mean, I would be happy going as long as you wanted to on Bendis. But I think, you know, I think it'd be perfectly fine just to give the first arc of each title and then go back to some more classic stuff.
Yeah, and the other thing is Bendis is doing these books monthly, so it's not like we're going to have an issue of Superman or Action to talk about. We're, you know, only two weeks out of the month, so there's always room for other stuff. And I do want to continue to talk about Supergirl as well, because not only is it absolutely amazing, the first two issues of this new arc that are out, written by Mark Andreyko with incredible art by Kevin Maguire. Not only is it just a really well done comic, it also ties in very, very closely with what's going on in the Superman title. So we'll probably talk about Supergirl 22 next week. So let me go ahead and give a quick synopsis of Superman 3, and then we'll get into our thoughts on the issue. So the creative team, it's written by Brian Michael Bendis, as we mentioned. Incredible pencil work by Yvonne Reis. We've got Joe Prado and Eau Claire Albert on inks, Alex Sinclair on colors, Josh Reed on letters. I mean, just to talk about the art for a second, I've always been a big fan of Yvonne Reis, but I feel like the Superman stuff that he's doing right now is really next level. I mean, it is so good.
Yeah.
I mean, the detail, the emotion, and if he's – and his rendering, his figure work, backgrounds, you know, the way the actual comic looks, he's gotten a little better over the years, but he already was so good, like, right from when he started, that there wasn't really a lot of room for improvement. That's how good he was and has always been. But I have noticed over the years a real improvement in his sense of storytelling. And it's not to say, again, that it wasn't good when he started, but he's gotten better at – and this is going to sound weird – he's gotten better at being a little more subtle if you know what I mean. Like, he doesn't always show the obvious. Sometimes he'll show, you know, a shot and it's literally like the part of someone's lower back and like their fist clenched. He does that here in one of these pages. And he can make an emotional scene without showing the person's face or much of their body at all. Just a, you know, a little snippet of body language, and it's done really, really well. There's also a sequence with Adam Strange that's pretty funny that, again, is kind of minimal in terms of art, but it's really impactful and kind of funny, just the way that Yvonne Reese draws it. So, you know, his longtime collaborator, Joe Prado, I mean, they're a dream team. And then when you put Alex Sinclair's colors, who's one of the best colorists out there, I did notice in this issue, the colors aren't quite as vibrant as they've been in previous issues of Superman. And I think that's purposeful. And I think it's an inspired choice. Because as you'll see when I get into talking about the synopsis here, the Earth has been in the Phantom Zone for a little while now. And it's starting to, the Earth itself is starting to feel the effects of being in the Phantom Zone. And I think that's why you're starting to see the colors become a little more muted. Like, things are going badly for the Earth and for the laws of physics and things like that. So it makes sense that things would seem a little darker. And hopefully things are darkest before the dawn and Superman's going to get this figured out. But great job by the entire art team. Before I dive into the issue, is there anything you want to say about the art, Adam?
I agree with you completely. I'm looking at a page right now where he's in Star Labs and just, you know, he gets hit by a bolt of lightning and there is like a panel that's just, it's just a beat of Superman's face. Just him, you know, I imagine like he's just taking an exhale right there. I think that it's really simply layered, but yeah, the format's really working out. It doesn't have to be crazy all the time. It's a nice balance between the big battle splash pages and those kind of smaller beats.
Yeah, we've got to give Bendis credit too, because, you know, even on a, this is what people don't necessarily understand. They'll see an issue, I think Bloodshot with Jeff Lemire, Bloodshot Salvation. They recently did an issue that didn't have any dialogue and people were complaining, well, how can Jeff Lemire get a paycheck for this? This is ridiculous. Just because there's no dialogue doesn't mean somebody still didn't have to write that panel, like a panel description or at least engage with the artist about, hey, this is what we want to see in the panel. And there may be some back and forth. An artist is, or a writer and an artist are needed for every panel, no matter how much or how little dialogue are in it.
Yeah. I also want to say, I think we're seeing in the Superman title the same thing we're seeing in the action title, which is he's asking the artist, like, what are you best at? And then he's writing that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty veteran comic writer move, and I'm sure Bendis is all over that. All right, well, let's go ahead and give the synopsis here. It starts off with a splash page of a live wire. No relation to the Valiant character. This is a villain that first showed up, I believe, in the animated series. And I know for sure she was in the Superman Adventures comic. And she's an interesting character. Electrical powers, kind of always been sort of a diva. And she apparently has been in a cell at Star Labs. And with the Earth shifting into the Phantom Zone, she's able to escape. And she's full of vigor and ready to get her revenge, talking about, well, I just found out you nerds have been holding me and you're going to show me, how to completely jack up my powers to the next level. And she, as she walks out of her cell into this laboratory at Star Labs, she's like, is this a bad time? And we see the technicians there at Star Labs looking at some computer screens, trying to figure out what's going on. And, up where the roof of the laboratory should be is this spinning vortex that's like sucking things up into it. We even notice one of the scientists, several of them that have longer hair, their hair is being standing up as it's being pulled into this vortex. And she's like,
yeah, is this a bad time? And they're like, yeah, kind of. And another of the scientists is wondering if Livewire is behind what happened. Like, you did this. And Livewire's like, no. I'm very good at making the most out of a bad situation, though. So you mind telling me where you keep the stuff like the kryptonite? And the scientist's like, oh, that wasn't you? Well, something went really wrong. And we see a voice off panel saying, what did you do? And Livewire's response is, see, that's just not fair. And that voice from off panel is Superman saying, what did you do? He assumes he has arrived on scene and there's only one supervillain in the room. So, of course, you're going to get blamed for it, right? Livewire doesn't hesitate. She immediately unleashes the full brunt of her powers on Superman. And honestly, he puts his hands up to kind of shield his face. And it looks like, okay, this big gust of wind came and annoyed me and blew some dust in my eyes. Because in the next panel, and this is the one that Adam was referring to, he's there.
Yeah.
And he's got a little residual electricity like sparkling around him. But the look on his face is just like, why did you annoy me like that? Because that's all it was annoyance. Like, you could have just answered my question. And Livewire's like, And then Superman, by this point, has realized that Livewire's not behind this, right? Like, even as he was asking her, what did you do? He was taking everything in with all his senses. Again, it's a great job by Bendis of going back to that idea that Bendis introduced in the Man of Steel series, where Superman's senses are such that he really can gather a lot of information quickly. And it's something a lot of writers haven't focused on, but just how knowledgeable Superman can be about a particular situation, because he can basically see the interactions between atoms and molecules and everything. So he does realize right away that Livewire is not behind it. Basically, as soon as the question's out of his mouth, he realizes it. So after her blasting him, he's like, you know, why don't you try helping for once, you know? And the scientists are like, Superman, can you do something to contain the facility? And Superman, again, he's like, well, what happened? I'm trying to understand. And they're like, well, the Phantom Zone. We were trying to map it as an experiment, like map its breadth and its dimension. But then this happened. And we really want to make sure that we contain it, but really, how bad could the damage get? And Superman's like, that's when he realizes that they don't know. He says, could get? You know, the entire planet, it's affected the entire planet, right? Like, the entire planet is in the Phantom Zone. And the look on the scientist's face is just like, what? Superman, you can tell how perturbed he is. He's trying to hold his temper in check, because he knows that these scientists were probably meddling with something they shouldn't have been, but they certainly didn't do this on purpose. And so he says, okay, show me what went wrong before we all die. As we turn the page, we shift focus here. We're looking at Rogol Zar, who is wearing the remnants of a cape that has the House of El emblem on it, and basically sitting by a fire. And a voice off panel says, you know, it's dangerous enough in the Phantom Zone without starting a fire that's going to attract attention to you. And the Kryptonian House of El symbol, probably another thing you shouldn't be doing. And Rogol Zar, same response. Fire? Not dangerous to me. Wearing this cape? Not dangerous to me. And as the figure approaches, Rogol Zar says, you know, I don't mean to be impolite, but what species are you? And apparently, he's Rogol Zar species, because that's his response. I am Rogol Zar. And the other gentleman here says, I'm Jux-Ur. And Rogol says, what did you do? Like, why are you here? Why are you in the Phantom Zone? Jux-Ur's response is, I'm innocent. I, you know, wrongly accused. I didn't do anything. Rogelzar knows, even before he asked the question, he knew who Juxar was. He says, "You destroyed Wegthor, the moon of Krypton." And Juxar's like, "Ah, a well-referenced stranger. Who are you again?" He said, "You've been here a long time, Juxar." And Juxar says, "Well, yeah, I've been here long enough to figure out the way things work here." And apparently that's the signal. And we see a bunch of other Phantom Zone residents kind of come out of the shadows. They've got Rogelzar surrounded. And Rogelzar is immediately aware of this, but he tells Juxar, look over your head. You see anything else new?" And they look up. They see the planet Earth. It's now kind of surrounded by some pinkish energy. Juxar wants to know what it is. And Rogelzar tells him, "You know, it's planet Earth." And Juxar says, "Well, yeah, that's not possible. You know, well, thank you for this information. I can't wait to hear the story behind it, but goodbye." And they attack. And there's an awesome double page spread of Rogelzar basically laying waste to this this impromptu army in no time flat. As we turn the page, we see we're back on Earth. There is a plane coming in for a landing at SeaTac, which is the Seattle-Tacoma airport, and they've lost an engine. They're being hit by some of this greenish energy. Looks very much like lightning, all to do with side effects of being in the Phantom Zone, and it looks like they're going to crash. They're not even cleared for landing yet. There's other planes that are trying to come in for a landing, but before they crash into the city, Superman swoops in the nick of time and basically flies them himself, powers their plane for him with his power. And then we get an interesting scene with the Justice League here, as Superman's calling to kind of get a status report. You know, "Anybody hear me? Batman, what's your situation?" Batman, we see a scene where he's literally praying to the porcelain god, like he's had too much to drink the night before. He's kneeling, arm laid across the toilet, and just he's not in good shape. Then the scene shifts. Superman's just stopped a train from going off of a bridge. And as he's doing that, he's asking Flash for an update. Flash is actually in a hospital. He says, I think it's the Phantom Zone atmosphere. It's like poison." And then we get Martian Manhunter saying it's not atmosphere. And Flash is like, "Wait, what do you mean? Who's talking?" And we see that Martian Manhunter, apparently him and Superman's they're not human, right? So they're not affected the way the other heroes are being affected. And Martian Manhunter rather says the Phantom Zone has made the atmosphere of Earth toxic, basically. They're all slowly being poisoned because whatever's in the Phantom Zone is mixing with the Earth's atmosphere, and it's causing issues. So we see more panels of Superman being where he needs to be, saving some guys, some people in a hot air balloon. Cyborg apparently isn't as affected, and maybe because he's not all human anymore, because he says, "This is Cyborg. I'm starting to get some very serious seismic activity. I think the Earth is beginning to lose itself." Aquaman seems to be okay as well. He says, "I do have to ask, if the Earth is here, what is where the Earth was?" And that's when we get those panels that I was talking about with Adam Strange. And he's basically where Earth was. And he's like, "Guys, this is Adam Strange, all the way from Ran. It's not funny." And he's just literally there next to a satellite where Earth was. So apparently where Earth was is just a big empty hole in space. Or not even empty holes, just more space. there's nothing there. So back in the Phantom Zone, Rogelzar has basically vanquished this impromptu army that attacked. And he's like, "I want you all to hear me. I didn't kill you. I only subdued you. Why? Because we need each other. You need my leadership. I'll lead you into battle, and you need spoils. We have work to do. Surrender to me, and I will lead you. And you, Juxar, if not for Drew Zod of the Kryptonian Military Guide, you're considered our guild, you're considered the worst criminal in Krypton history. They teach of you across many galaxies. So, although I'm a mystery to you, I'm here in the Phantom Zone, and I'm cloaked in the tattered flag of the House of El. Even I have heard of you, and you're the mother legend of fiction. And Jaxar's like, who are you? You know, because all he knows is it's Rogol Zaar, but who is that, right? And that's Rogol Zaar's response again. I am Rogol Zaar, and I too hate Superman. Above us is this mysterious, above us suddenly, mysteriously, is planet Earth, his planet. Don't know how it got here, but it does offer us an opportunity, right? The opportunity to escape, because I was sent here with the Phantom Zone projector. That Phantom Zone projector is up there on Earth. So wake up, right? Let's do this. We can be done walking in this wasteland. We invade the planet. We take the Phantom Zone projector. We leave the Earth here, getting our revenge on Superman, and we have our freedom. And Jaxar says, well, you know, it's been a long time since someone really spoke to me. And you can tell he's considering. And Rogol Zaar says, gather the army. Gather as many as you can. I will start preparations for war. Back on Earth, we get a really interesting scene. I don't know why people would be looting at this time. Like, you realize your world's coming to an end. It doesn't matter if you're off getting a brand new TV. Like, who cares, right? I mean, are TVs even working right now? You know? I don't think anything broadcasting through the atmosphere would work, but who knows? Anyway, in the midst of this crowd, Superman flies down and lands and says, put it down. Cut it out now. And he flies off. And everybody turns around and starts taking all the merchandise back inside the stores, muttering to each other, I told you so. And at the Hall of Justice, which also isn't in particularly great shape, we see the Bug is parked outside, Blue Beetle's form of transportation, and we get some of the brightest minds trying to figure out what exactly is going on. Mr. Terrific is there, Will Magnus, the one that created the Metal Men, is there, Ray Palmer, the Atom, Ted Kord, as well as Ryan Chow. And they're all trying to figure out what exactly is going on. And Superman shows up, says, hey, I've just come from Star Labs. And Adam's like, yep, it was Star Labs. I knew it. And Superman says, it was just an accident. Like, they told you that? What is wrong with them? Like, Superman, what do we do? Like, they're all asking him, every one of them in unison, Superman, what do we do? I mean, these are the smartest minds, some of the smartest minds in the DCU, and they are not even sure what to do. So the Atom, the Ray Palmer version of the Atom, says, I'm going to head over to Star Labs and investigate, see if I can figure out what went wrong and how we can fix it. But you have to know, Superman, the Earth is not meant for this. So they head off to investigate while Superman senses that there's something wrong. You can kind of see it in the last panel. He's like, here's something that gets his attention. And he looks up and immediately flies up through the hall, out of the Hall of Justice into space. And he's not happy. So this is the Phantom Zone, right? All of Kryptonian's nightmares. The worst of the worst. Says, I haven't felt this in the pit of my stomach in a long time, but I see you. I hear you. Come on then, if this is what it's meant to be. And apparently it's meant to be war, because as you turn to the final page, we see a double page spread of all these villains, all these Kryptonian villains being led by Rogol Zaar, flying on some pretty hideous looking beasts. And yeah, next issue is war. So I think that Superman, kind of the anger that he shows on his face and what he's feeling and why he's kind of like bring it on is because here's the Earth, his adopted homeworld, the planet that he loves, and it's in this terrible situation, and he needs to be focusing all his energy and thought and efforts on Earth. And we know eventually his powers are going to start to wane because there's no yellow sun to recharge them. So he knows where he needs to be. And in the midst of all that, really, you guys are going to come and take advantage. Like that doesn't sit well with him. And so I think in a way he's kind of reached his limit. Like, fine, you want to do this? Then let's do this. And he's got to be pretty fed up with Rogol Zaar in general, regardless of being in the Phantom Zone or not. So seeing Rogol Zaar being the catalyst, the one that's kind of leading this army to attack Earth, yeah, he's not going to be happy. So I'm really excited for the next issue to see how Bendis handles Superman when he's vastly outnumbered. We've seen him, I don't want to say up the power of Superman, but we've seen him have Superman use his powers in unique ways and really show just how powerful Superman is, rather than kind of the same old status quo of, that other writers have used. So I'm curious to see what kind of new takes Bendis is going to have on Superman fighting a battle where he's so vastly outnumbered. But the action, I feel, really ramped up in this issue. It's nonstop. We don't really get too many character moments other than a little panel here or there, which I was completely okay with because the action is ramping up and you know, the progression of story, you're always going to have issues where there's a lot more that happens and a lot more action. And then you're going to have the lower points where it's a little more quiet and we work on character. You have to have that up and down. Otherwise, the story just feels flat because basically it is. The story beats can't always come and can't always have the same kind of highs or lows. It's just the nature of storytelling. So what were your thoughts overall about the issue, Adam?
I loved it a lot. I like that it seems like I don't know if we are moving forward that much, because like you said, you know, a lot of people have been having a problem with how decompressed it was. And really, plot-wise, all that's happened was Rogol got his army that he wanted. But I like that it taking an issue to show just how much Earth would go nuts if this happens is a really is a big advantage to a decompressed storytelling.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, we talk about it's impossible when you're analyzing a Bendis comic not to talk about decompression, just because of the nature of the way that he writes. But I haven't read a ton of Bendis stuff, but I do feel like some of his stuff is more decompressed than others. So it's not like I'm trying to let him off the hook, and I'm not a giant Bendis fan. I'm not, you know, trying to defend him or anything.
Right.
But I do think it's a little unfair that he always gets labeled with this, oh, he's got such a decompressed story telling style. It takes him forever to like get to the point or whatever. Like if you look at this as a single issue, which there's enough here, there's enough context here that you could pick this up as a first issue. Like if you didn't read the first two issues of Superman, you easily could pick this up and you completely understand what's going on. You know, we have the scene with Star Labs. We understand the Earth's in the Phantom Zone. We know that the other heroes, a lot of them are the like fully human ones like Flash and Batman are sick. You get everything that you need, but there's nothing about this issue I feel is decompressed. Like it is jam packed with dialogue and action and story progression. So again, I think it's not necessarily fair to always be throwing that, oh, Bendis tells decompressed stories. Yeah, sometimes if you look at the Man of Steel miniseries, it's a little decompressed. It's a little slower paced, because that's really what we're talking about when we say a decompressed storyline, right? Like you're taking a story that you want to tell and you're spreading it out over more issues. You're slowing down the pace so you can explore more of what's happening. You can have time for character moments. You can focus on dialogue and scripting, which we all know is Bendis's strength. He's great at dialogue and having interaction between people with like humorous anecdotes and inside jokes and all that kind of stuff. He's great at that. There's no doubt. And so why wouldn't a writer want to write in a style that focuses on their strength? I mean, I think we all want that, right? It makes good comics. Of course, the problem being when you are slowing the pace down so much that sometimes people get bored, right? And I think that's why a lot of people tend to read Bendis stories in trade, right? Because then you know that you're getting like the whole story or a bigger chunk of story rather than picking up single issues and you feel like you didn't necessarily get value. So that's not the case with this particular issue. I feel like, you know, as we've talked about, it's nonstop action from the beginning to the end of the issue. And that's not to say that there's not still time for those character moments, because, you know, we talked about Livewire attacking Superman. We talked about the Adam Strange moment. We talked about Superman laying across the toilet. So you still get those little Bendis-y moments. But there, like I said, there's nothing decompressed about this issue. So would you tend to agree, Adam?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Maybe decompressed was the wrong word to use. But I guess I just saying taking plot one step at a time, it has its advantage.
Right. Now, that is definitely true. That is definitely true, because that's the thing that's also interesting about what Bendis is doing, because he's you know, we wondered about how tightly his two different stories, his two different titles were going to be woven together. And it turns out not at all, right? In action, right. He's still back over there in Metropolis, Superman, that is. And there's no mention of the Phantom Zone. Whereas here, yeah, he's in the Phantom Zone and dealing with something completely different. So he can pace each of the stories differently because they're not necessarily connected, although they both have Superman at the heart of it. So that's kind of interesting as well. I imagine at some point they've got to cross over. Maybe that'll happen after the initial arcs. That'll be interesting to see. But I love this issue. I love seeing Livewire. I think she's a bit of an underused character. I think there's potential there. I don't know that anybody's really used her the right way yet. And I say that like there's a right way to use a character, and I know what it is, but I just feel like she hasn't necessarily connected with the wider DC reading audience. And so that's why I say, yeah, maybe she hasn't been used in a great way so that she kind of resonates with people. You know, you often hear, and I'll ask you this, I'm curious, Adam, because you're such a giant Superman fan. People, and I hear this all the time at cons, think that Batman has the best villains. Batman has the best rogues gallery. There are like fans, right? Like there are people that love the Joker. They love the Penguin. They love Two-Face. All these Batman villains, they love it when the villain, these whatever particular villains show up in the pages of a Batman comic. I think that Superman has really good villains as well, but they're not, I'll use the word revered, the way Batman villains are. And I find that to be interesting. I'm not sure why, because I think that there are some villains that really, I mean, to me, Lex Luthor is like the greatest villain in all the DC universe. That's a Superman villain. So, you know, Brainiac and Toy Man, there's a lot of really, really good ones. Doomsday. So, you know, I'd make the argument that Superman has the best villains. I actually wouldn't make that argument to a Batman fan because I honestly don't want to waste the time. You know, I know I'm never going to convince them. But I find that interesting because I think that Superman villains, I mean, they haven't reached the level of popularity, I guess, that Batman villains have, but I think there's the potential for that to happen. I don't know if it ever would or ever will, but I think, you know, Livewire is a perfect example of that. What do you think?
I agree. I think my theory is that Batman villains, you kind of get their gimmick immediately. It's immediate appeal. And with Superman villains, I think they're best when they represent a problem of the world. And that's a little bit more, you got to read more into it. So, you know, Lex is greed, he's ego. Parasite is, you know, consumption and gluttony. Livewire, I would say, you know, can be skepticism. And just, you know, it's the way that Superman can be used with his villains to explore our world's problems.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about, because they really do. When you're talking Batman and you're talking Superman, they do really have a different scope. I mean, Batman focuses on Gotham, and there are times, depending on the writer, where he will kind of branch out. I mean, you know, we've seen these stories where he's got satellites watching everybody, Big Brother, blah, blah, blah. But I think overall, Batman's scope is a little smaller. You know, he doesn't have the ability to fly across the world in seconds and try to solve a problem, whereas Superman does. And so, yeah, generally speaking, Superman's villains need to be more powerful to actually be a threat to him. You know, when you compare that to the power level or threat level of a Batman villain, they don't have to be quite as powerful or able to affect or cause as much destruction as a Batman villain. So, yeah, it would be an interesting case study. Let's see. Is there anything else that we want to say about this issue?
Well, I just had a theory that I just picked up while you were going over it, is that you pointed out that some heroes are immune because they aren't human. I don't know if that's the case. I just noticed, because Martian Manhunter says we are all being slowly poisoned, and we see that the looters aren't sick right now, so it might affect them later. But also the active heroes we see, it Martian Manhunter, Superman, obviously, Cyborg, and then we see Aquaman has a line, and these are all superheroes that don't need to use their lungs as much.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if we're going to get an issue down the line where they do start to get affected by this.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering about the whole, well, how come the other humans, you know, they feel okay enough to go out and loot stores. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think next issue, if we can speculate a little bit, we're going to start seeing Superman's power level start to drop. I have a feeling, just because it's the worst possible time now that this army's attacking, for his powers to start to fade a little. So I expect to see that. And yeah, and I expect to see the we're being poisoned aspect kind of take more of a central role. So, but yeah, I guess it's, in a way, it's all up to the Atom at this point to figure out what's going on.
Well, I hope he is like fully powered, because it is, he's going up against a serious threat. And I don't know if, have we seen him in the Phantom Zone, if he retains flight and his full strength? I feel like he has him.
Yeah, I think, isn't flight one of the first things to go?
Right. So I don't know if there's something about the atmosphere that holds on to additional sunlight or what.
Although the other thing to consider is the fact that in the Phantom Zone, everything's going to work a little different. So maybe flight won't be the first one to go.
If I may, too, another thing I wanted to say about this issue was I like the first scene with Livewire so much, because it points out that this is an atypical story in which there is no big bad to blame for this event. It's kind of just it either was an accident or it's just a consequence of using the Phantom Zone too much. It's not like this isn't Darkseid attacking them.
Right. Yeah, and I also find it like, I still can't wrap my head around who Rogelzar is. I'm kind of like Juxer, right? Like, who are you? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
And clearly, like he says, he just wants his freedom. I can't blame him for that. But it's also, I do feel like, I mean, I don't know. I just don't really care for him that much as a character. And maybe it's because we haven't got to the point where Bendis has given us the hook yet about him. But I really don't care for the way he looks visually. I don't know who designed him, but I don't know. He looks like a poor man's Doomsday. It just doesn't really do it for me. I almost feel like I would have been happier if he'd gotten put in the Phantom Zone and just left on the shelf for a little while instead of going right back to him. But again, maybe it's just because we haven't got that explanation. We haven't got his origin yet. That's going to make us understand who he is as a character. I mean, why does he dislike Kryptonians so much is another thing. Like, you know, as soon as he found out there was a Kryptonian alive, he immediately came to Earth. What has he been doing in the meantime? Like all these years since Krypton exploded, just flying around space, bar hopping. Like, I don't know. I could definitely use a little more Rogelzar characterization to kind of understand who he is.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I'm intrigued by him, but we do need a little bit more character moments and motive. I believe it was Jim Lee who designed him, and there is still some kind of 90s over-the-topness in his design that reflects that.
Yeah, and I usually tend to like Jim Lee designed characters, so that's really strange. I don't know, maybe he just decided to go do something different than he'd ever done. Maybe it's just the scars, and maybe he's not supposed to look, I mean, maybe Lee purposely designed him to look asymmetrical and, you know, it's uncomfortable to look at him rather than the other way around with him looking like a slick villain. So I get that for sure. All right. One last thing I'll speculate on. I have a feeling whatever solution Ray Palmer and Ryan Choi and Mr. Terrific and Will Magnuson and the Ted Kord, the brain trust we saw in this issue, whatever solution they come up with, I have a feeling is going to be reliant on Superman to do something. Like, okay, we figured out how to get the Earth out of the Phantom Zone, Superman, but you need to be able to do this. And whatever this is going to push Superman to his absolute limits, again, because of that no yellow sun, power levels dropping. And we've talked a lot on this podcast, or I've talked a lot on this podcast in the past, about why some writers dislike writing Superman. And it's because how do you challenge him when he's so powerful? And this is almost Bendis's way of doing that. Like, okay, take away his power source. A lot of writers will say, well, Dan Jurgens' thought is always you have to challenge him emotionally. You know, it's where you can, you know, threaten the things that he loves, and it's where story can be found. Bendis has taken a different tack, and I do appreciate that. Like, how do you make Superman vulnerable? Well, take away the sun, basically, and you start to see consequences of that. So I have enjoyed this run on Superman, this story arc, a lot more than I enjoyed the Man of Steel 6-issue. And I'm not sure where I would put action yet. We've only had 2 issues of action come out, so maybe I need at least one more in order to decide. All right, anything?
Yeah, I think I'm preferring action over this. I just wanted to say I've been pretty, you know, defending Bendis on a lot of his choices, but I will say if it is a story about depowering him, I probably would be disappointed. Because it does look like there's enough here to challenge him physically at full power.
Yeah, that's true. That's true as well. So, well, we can speculate probably for another hour but it's not going to, right. It's not necessarily going to lead us anywhere. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I'm pleasantly surprised how much I'm enjoying the Superman run. I will say that because, I just wasn't sure how I felt about Bendis on Superman after the action run. And I'm enjoying, Man of Steel series. I'm enjoying action a lot as well with the Metropolis and the relationships and everything that's going on there. We even got a listener theory about something that's going on in action that I'll share the next time we cover an issue of Action Ooh. Comics. So
interesting.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining as always. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.